I'm Amber Tresca, and this is About IBD. I'm a medical writer and patient educator who lives with a J-pouch due to ulcerative colitis. It's my mission to educate people living with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis about their disease and to bring awareness to the patient journey. Welcome to episode 151. The topic for this episode is what the insurance companies call copay accumulators. Some of the medications used to treat IBD and other immune-mediated conditions are expensive. This is especially true for brand-name medications that don't have a generic or a biosimilar available. For this reason, drug manufacturers have put copay savings programs into place to help patients afford these medications. Originally, the payments made by the drug manufacturers via their patient assistance programs counted towards a patient's deductible and out-of-pocket maximums. But that changed in 2018 when insurance companies and pharmacy benefit managers stopped counting the payments from copay savings programs towards deductibles. Overnight, patients who were relying on manufacturer copay programs experienced higher healthcare costs. Insurance companies are collecting payment for the name brand medication and also collecting the deductible from patients. In 2021, copay accumulators were officially allowed by a federal ruling, and more than 80% of insurance carriers adopted their use. It's estimated that more than 40% of insured patients are subjected to a copay accumulator program. However, their implementation has not been consistent. In 2023, the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute and others brought a case against the 2021 ruling, and it was ultimately struck down. As of this recording, 21 states and the District of Columbia ban or restrict copay accumulator programs. However, insurance carriers continue to not count copay savings programs towards patient deductibles. Some of the reasons that they give can include receiving a medication that has a generic or a biosimilar available, and if an insurance carrier deems a medication as being not medically necessary. My guest is Amber McCown. Amber was thrilled when her husband got a new job, and with it, a better insurance plan. She receives medications for her Crohn's disease and other conditions. However, her carrier has inconsistently applied a copay accumulator program. This took her by surprise at the start of a new calendar year and left her on the hook for higher healthcare costs. Amber tells her story of how a copay accumulator program has affected her life and caused her stress. Plus, she talks about the steps she's taking to address the problem and gives her suggestions if you are being subjected to a copay accumulator program yourself. Amber, thank you so much for coming on About IBD. I'm so excited to speak with you.
I'm happy to be here.
Great. So the first thing I'm going to do is ask you to introduce yourself. Your name is Amber. My name is Amber. Hopefully that's not too confusing. I know it is to me. But would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. Amber McCown. I'm 38. I'm married. No kids. I've got 5 pets. So those are kind of my kids. 2 dogs, 3 cats. I've got Crohn's, IBS. I also have a mild kidney failure. Mm-hmm. That's not the end of my list, but those are the most relevant problems I have. I work a part-time job. I have a bachelor's degree in biology. For the most part, pretty happy with my life. Love my husband. He's amazing. He's been amazing through absolutely everything. Even we were together for years before we got married, and he was in it from pretty much day one.
I love that you have that support. It is so helpful, especially when dealing with the ups and downs of living with Crohn's disease and the other conditions that you also have. And I want to dig more into your Crohn's disease journey first. So I wonder if you would tell me a little bit about how that all started for you, what your symptoms were like, and how old were you and how you were diagnosed?
Sure. I was diagnosed when I was about 12 or 13, which would have been around 97 or 98. Mm-hmm. So while I live in a pretty big city in the Midwest, I don't live in like the biggest metropolis, so we did not have a pediatric gastroenterologist in my city. We had to drive across the state to see one, and I'd been sick with gastro problems most of my childhood, just constant stomach aches and frequent vomiting. To be fairly blunt, I figure this is a pretty blunt topic.
Absolutely.
Not a lot of sugarcoating this.
No.
And it was pretty much literally as soon as I started grade school that I started having problems, and nobody could tell me what was wrong with me until they finally decided to send me nearly out of state to see a specialist and have my first scope. Huzzah. Mm-hmm. And they're like, and wasn't that an experience for a 12-year-old to, you know, fast for 2 days because it's your first one, so they want to make extra sure that you're completely ready. So I absolutely no solids for 2 days. And they sat us, me and my parents, down, and they're like, you have Crohn's. And we're like, what's that?
Yeah.
Because we'd never heard that word before. And they're like, well, it's this. Your body is trying to, is attacking itself in a very, very specific way. And you can't do this, and you can't do this, and you're going to need this. And we're going to put you on steroids for months at a time because we have no other treatments for you at this time. We did our best. We did the treatments. We managed my diet as best as we could. And it felt like we were always getting information a day late.
Ugh, yeah.
Like, okay, we're going to put you on steroids for months at a time and not tell you to restrict your sodium intake until you call us wondering why your daughter is blowing up like a balloon.
Right.
After she ate a can of Pringles. Maybe you should restrict her sodium intake.
Yeah.
I will gladly follow instructions if I have them. It's really hard to manage a thing when your doctor is across the state and you can't see him except for maybe once a year or every other year because you literally cannot afford to travel to see him, and there's no telehealth to sort of bridge the gap, and it's just you and your GP and your far off gastroenterologist trying to make this work, and you're just so thrilled when they get a pediatric gastroenterologist intern in town.
Mm-hmm.
When I turned 16 or 17 and they're finally like, you know what, you're old enough to see an adult specialist, I'm like, thank God, because then I can, you know, see someone, talk to someone when I need to. Because by that point I'd seen a number of doctors and I was already to the point where I decided to take charge of as much as my health care as I could. And I had my GP find me one of the premier specialists in the country who just happened to be in my city.
Wow.
And I've had him since then. And he's been an absolute champion. One of the kindest men you will ever meet.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm so glad you had a few bumps there in the journey, but you finally got to where you needed to be. I'm going to pivot now to the reason that we got connected, and that's because you have become subject to what's called a copay accumulator program, and a lot of people will be familiar with this already, and this has to do with how you're receiving your medication and who's paying for it, but I wonder if you would take a minute to explain a little bit about what a copay accumulator program is.
Yes, it is an amazing pain in the butt to deal with. It is a scheme by the insurance companies to milk more money out of patients. So you have your deductible, and say you're like us and you have these outrageously expensive medications. For me, it's Stelara, which is an immunosuppressant. My house, we are big fans. We always sort of hoot and holler when it comes on commercials. Woo! Yay, Stelara! Big fans. but it is outrageously expensive. It's like $20,000 for one dose. And I get this dose every 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So about six times a year. Mm-hmm. Now, the company who makes this knows it's outrageously expensive. And they will help you pay for it. They will calculate how much your insurance is going to pay for it. And then they will chip in pretty much the rest of it. My out-of-pocket is $5.
Right.
Excellent deal, right? Awesome. And that's not like a coupon. That is real money they are paying to your specialty pharmacy. It's not like a buy one, get one free. It is real money they are paying to your pharmacy.
Yeah.
It's called a copay assistance program. Most people with these drugs will know what this is.
Yeah.
They pay, your insurance pay, bam, your medicine shows up, you're good to go. Now, what usually happens when you don't have a copay accumulator plan is that copay assistance goes towards your deductible. And for a lot of people, that first dose kills their copay, kills their max out of pocket, and they're set for the rest of the year.
Right.
It takes care of basically everything. Mm-hmm. But this copay accumulator program, they ignore that copay assistance. It does not go towards your deductible. It might as well not have happened. It still pays for your medication. Mm-hmm. It still goes towards that pharmacy, but it does not go towards your copay.
Right.
So any other medical stuff you have to pay for, you have to keep chugging along, paying for that deductible until you meet it, until you meet that max out of pocket. And eventually you'll meet that deductible, hopefully. And then you'll start getting the benefits of having that deductible and that max out of pocket met. But that's the difference between, that's thousands of dollars for me.
Right.
My deductible, my personal deductible is $3,000. Mm-hmm. And my max out of pocket is, I think, over $4,000. Mm-hmm. And they just get to say that real money that got paid towards my shot doesn't count. And I think that is beyond insane. And apparently I'm not the only one.
No, you're definitely not the only one. And I think when insurance companies started doing this, it caught people off balance as well, because previously these pharmacy assistance programs were being counted towards your deductible, and then all of a sudden, 1 year, they're not.
Absolutely. And you
then
plan for that.
You're on the hook. Yeah, you plan for it.
Yeah. When you have an autoimmune disease, you rarely just have that one thing wrong. For starters, they tend to stack.
Yeah.
Autoimmune diseases tend to run in packs for some reason. Two, if you already have autoimmune disease, even if you don't have other autoimmune diseases, you tend to have other things wrong with you largely because of the autoimmune disease. Like for me, it's the mild kidney failure or kidney disease is probably because of those months of steroids I was on when we had no other treatment when I was 12 or 13.
Yeah.
It's just a theory, but it's been one that my nephrologist has not shaken his head at. So... So there's that. And then there's the IBS, which is different from my Crohn's, but probably not unrelated. And because I'm on an immunosuppressant, I catch everything. So you have all these things wrong with you. So it'd be really nice if 1 to 2 months into the year, I could knock my deductible out like I'm used to doing and have been doing for the last several years I've been on whichever immunosuppressant biologic that I've been on, because they're all expensive.
Yeah. Even the ones that are less expensive are still
expensive. So you plan for these sorts of things.
Right. And it wasn't like they sent you a letter or anything like that, right? It was just all of a sudden you noticed that your deductible was not knocked out with that first dose that you received in January.
Yeah, and double problematically. Speaking of notice, I have my insurance through my husband's work, which I am blessed that he has a new job. I am thrilled that he has this job. Mm-hmm. I'm blessed to have insurance. I want to make that clear. I am thrilled that I have insurance. I know some people don't, and that's a whole different problem.
Right.
Last year, he started his job like a third of the way through the year. So he got his insurance almost halfway through the year. So we got my first shot on the new insurance, you know, quite a ways into the year. Mm-hmm. And they kind of forgot to not apply it to my deductible. So it ended up applying to my deductible and I was set. And everything was hunky-dory for the whole rest of the year. And then the new year flipped over and suddenly not so hot, not so great. Yeah, I had a brand new health problem thanks to COVID, long COVID, that I'm still dealing with. And I'm like, okay, I've got this mapped out in my head. I can make the samples last until here. My shot will kill the deductible. I'll get the new super expensive, but not as expensive medication here because my deductible will be met and then I can afford the medication. Right. Well, the shot didn't kill the deductible like I was expecting. So I couldn't get that new medication that was working on the new medical problem. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? This worked fine last year. And they're like, oh yeah, you've got this thing. And I'm like, well, why didn't I have this thing last year? And they're like, we forgot. So we just didn't do anything about it last year. And I'm like, you forgot, but now, but you be sure not to forget this year so you can screw me.
Right. It's also had a knock-on effect.
Absolutely.
It sounds to me that you're thinking about all of these things. You're thinking about how to best manage your healthcare in a cost-effective way. Mm-hmm. But the insurance company is engaging in malfeasance and not meeting you even halfway, and then also not letting you in on their policies. They're just changing it in the middle of everything.
Pretty much. I mean, technically, it's all there in black and white. If you go looking for it, like,
yeah,
it's there. But, like, you forgot to do this thing last year, so I thought I was okay.
Right.
But you made sure to do it this year, and now so many of my plans are screwed up.
Coming up next, how the copay accumulator program is affecting Amber and her family. All right, so let's talk a little bit about stress. Because I want to understand a little more deeply about how this is affecting you emotionally, how it's affecting your family, and how it might be taking away time away from the things that you want to do, and then also causing you stress, which, as we know, can also affect the conditions that you live with.
Absolutely. So every phone call with these people for any reason, not just this reason, but any reason, is a practice in self-control and meditation like you would not believe. I've gotten off the phone furious to the point of sobbing. I've thrown my phone across the room. I do my best not to scream and cuss at the person I'm talking to because it's rarely their fault.
Yeah.
The person I'm talking to has no control over policy. They can't change it. But sometimes it's like, if I hear you haven't met your deductible one more time, I'm going to break my phone in half. It won't solve anything, but it might make me feel better for a second for a minute until I have to replace my phone.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, oh yeah, the medication you want is $300 because you haven't met your deductible yet.
Yeah.
And it's like, I go around and around and around in circles and I just want to pull my hair out. And some days it feels like trying to chew through drywall to make a door. And it can take hours to get anything done. Even things I know are supposed to get done within my policy.
Yeah.
Like just ordering my shot can take over an hour because I have to coordinate it with the insurance company, the specialty pharmacy, and the company that makes the shot to make sure everybody is on the same page so that it gets paid for and delivered on time. And nobody wants to talk to each other. They all want to talk to me.
Right.
And I feel like a kindergarten teacher and like everybody's fighting and nobody's talking to each other. And I'm like, and that's just one of my medications. I take so many. So hours on the phone when I could be doing literally anything else. Cleaning. I'd rather be cleaning my house. I hate cleaning anything else.
I feel that deeply, though, because sometimes I just want to clean my house. Like, I don't want to be on the phone with these people, the insurance company and everybody else. And I would just like to clean something.
Yeah. And my poor husband is watching this happen and there's nothing he can do because he cannot fight this fight for me.
Yeah.
He can be in my corner. He can have a beer ready for me when I am done. But he cannot make these calls for me because they won't talk to him about any of this no matter how many times I tell them they can.
Yeah.
So, and he sees me stressed out and he gets stressed out and it's just all the stress.
Amber, you've been working to raise awareness of copay accumulators and how they're affecting you, how they're affecting other patients and their families. You don't have to do this. So what made you decide to become public about your situation?
Well, when I first discovered that they were doing this to me, I thought, there is no way that this can be properly legal. How is this legal when they're getting cash money from somebody, just not me? What does it matter who they're getting the money from?
Right.
So I do what I usually do when I'm troubled about something. I Googled it and I found a court case from September that the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute and others brought against a rule that the Trump administration passed. And the rule was that they could do this.
Mm.
And the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute were not much pleased with this rule, because if you think Crohn's drugs are expensive, you should see HIV and hepatitis drug prices, because they're more expensive. And they won that court case. The decision was, if your name brand drug, you know, like Stelara, doesn't have a generic like Stelara, not supposed to be allowed to disregard the copay assistance for a patient's deductible. And I felt two things in that moment. I felt that giddy sort of win emotion you get when you see a bully trounced. And then I felt another wave of fury because they're still doing this to me.
They're still doing it.
It's against the law. It was ruled against in a federal court in the District Court of Columbia, federally, I want to emphasize. And they're still doing it to me. And I can't be alone.
So I want to talk about also what you've been doing personally. As you said, there was a court case. There are plenty of patient advocacy groups that are working on this issue, and they have been for a long time. Aside from working with the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute, have you been working with any of your legislators, either local or federal? Do you write letters? Does the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute recommend that patients do anything? I guess I'm just kind of maybe grasping at straws, like what can we do? Because we're all being financially penalized by something that we shouldn't be.
Right. Well, they recommended that I reach out to my state's insurance commissioner, which I did. They got me in touch with someone who arranged this interview. I reached out to my state's insurance commissioner, and they got back to me and said, not our department because it's insurance provided by employment.
Okay.
We're going to transfer this case over to the United States Department of Labor.
Okay.
So we're literally going to make a federal case out of this. Good luck.
That's already been made a federal case out of, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we're going to make another federal case out of this. Good luck.
Okay.
But basically, yeah, this kind of sucks, but not our problem. We're going to pass you along to someone whose problem it actually is, especially because the company my husband works for is a national company.
Okay. That was going to be the next question.
It can't just be the state's Department of Labor. It has to be the United States Department of Labor.
Right.
And they're like, someone from the United States Department of Labor, she called and said, I've got your case. We'll see what we can do. And she's been giving me regular, still working on it, no updates, updates.
Okay.
I got a letter from my insurance company saying, we're sorry you feel this way about the copay accumulator program, but we're not going to do anything about it. And I'm like, okay. And for a second there, I panicked a little, but then I remembered the U.S. Department of Labor hasn't finished yet. So that was probably just from the state commissioner investigation part. So like that was their notice of, we heard your complaint. Too bad, so sad. We're not going to do anything about it. And I'm like, and for a second there, I was a little panicky, like, crap, what do I do next? And then I realized the state insurance commissioner did do something.
Right.
Did, you know, file a complaint and all that. But then it turned out they couldn't do anything because it wasn't their department. And since I haven't been told that the U.S. Department of Labor was finished with their side, this was probably not the end. And so I'm waiting to hear back from the Department of Labor. And we'll see how that goes. If they think they can shake me with too bad, so sad letters, we don't care that you don't like this, then they don't know my history with local government, because this is not my first rodeo with making things happen with local government.
Yeah, and you're not willing to let it go, which I think sometimes the delay tactics are, that's what they are hoping for, is that you will just kind of give up. And frankly, there are people that kind of just give up on getting their medication because of these types of tactics. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm glad to hear that you're not going to stop, because it's going to benefit you, of course, but it's going to benefit all patients in this situation and the IBD community especially. And so to that end, I'm wondering if you have any advice for other patients who are finding themselves in this situation. Do you have any recommendations?
I haven't been successful yet, but I am certainly hoping to be. And my best advice is reach out to your doctor's office, and their office manager is a treasure trove of resources. Mine has been an amazing champion for me against my insurance, no matter what my insurance is doing. Take every problem, one problem at a time. I can't afford to give up.
Yeah.
I can't afford not to take these medications, and I can't afford the medications on my own. So I can't afford to give up.
Yeah.
So that kind of scrappy hunger, make them pay because you can't afford to, is kind of the attitude you have to go into all of these situations, and hoping for the light at the end of the tunnel, because there is no other way to live. Because if you go in with despair ready, you're going to hit that dead end. You're going to run out of energy to keep fighting. Also, a support structure is an amazing asset. I could not do this without my husband standing in my corner, my friends. They've really could not do this without them.
Thank you so much for that advice. That's really important what you said about sticking with things and making sure that you're keeping your head up during this whole process, because it is very difficult. And the fact that a court case has already been won and yet this is still going on is can be very frustrating, but we have to have hope. And I think also working towards making this better for yourself and then for other people as well can go a long way towards keeping that fire in your belly. Although it sounds like you don't have too much trouble keeping that fire going.
Yeah. Oh, you are going to cry through this. Let yourself cry. It's okay. You just can't live there. You can't let yourself live there. It's going to be infuriating. It's going to be depressing, but you get to visit there. You don't get to live there, or you'll never get out.
Yeah. Amber, so I want to ask you something a little bit more about yourself, though. Let's talk about something that's a little bit more fun for a minute or two. you let me in on the fact that you enjoy a Renaissance fair.
I do.
So I want to hear a little bit about that. I enjoy them as well. You got to go to one recently. Tell me a little bit about what you were up to and what you enjoy.
Yes, we just got back from one this weekend. We stayed at my sister-in-law's so that we could enjoy an out-of-state Renaissance fair, which we haven't gotten to do a lot until Andrew got his new job, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It was huge. It was gorgeous. Excellent weather. I got a little too much sun again. I am very Irish-Scottish mix, so I got a little lobster in the face, but I had a blast doing it. Love to see all the costumes. Love to see the knights duke it out with their cheesy moves and all that. We got to have a blast. I didn't dress up this time, but I hope to. We've got a local fair coming up in 2 weeks that I'm hoping to dress up for, that I will be my usual pirate wench.
I have a friend that loves a good pirate joke. I'll have to send you a bunch of pirate jokes that you can, when you're dressed, you can go around saying all of the jokes.
Oh, yes. I know some cheesy ones. They are just horrible.
Oh, yeah. All of her jokes are bad. But it's fine. It works out. We laugh at them anyway. I think it's also a great way to just like forget about all of this, right? Just like let it go for a weekend and just have a good time and see your family. So that sounds really great.
Yep. Oh, the food, the sounds, the shopping. Love the shopping.
Oh, the shopping. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. All the shopping.
Well, Amber, I want to thank you so much for talking with me, of course, and then for everything that you are doing to advance knowledge about copay accumulators and how they're affecting patients, and then also what we can do about them, because we're not helpless. We can't take steps. So I hope that you keep me updated as to what happens with the federal, and I hope to see your name in more publications. And then I just want to one more time remind us of the patient advocacy group that you're working with so that we can connect people with them as well. That group is the HIV and Hepatitis Policy Institute.
Correct.
So we can connect people with them. And I wish you the best of luck in this, because it's affecting me. It's affecting almost everyone that I know that lives with an IBD and other conditions as well. So thank you so much for everything that you're doing.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, super listener. Thanks to Amber McCown for her activism and for talking to me about why copay accumulators are a major problem for patients and how we can all take action. If you are unclear about your own healthcare costs, contact your insurance carrier. If you're not sure about your rights as a healthcare consumer, contact your state insurance commissioner. I will put a link on how to find yours in the show notes. As always, links to a written transcript and more information on the topics we discussed is in the show notes and on my episode 151 page on aboutibd.com. Thanks for listening. And remember, until next time, I want you to know more about IBD. About IBD is the production of Mal and Tal Enterprises. It is written, produced, and directed by me, Amber Tresca. Mix and sound design is by Mac Cooney. Theme music is from Cooney Studio.